Welcome in, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show here, rolling on through the three-hour live super stream. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax. He's JC Sherbert, and it's Tuesday, so we got Deputy Smitty. Welcome in, man.
How's it going, guys?
Man, sorry we were late. The SEC wants to kick LSU out of the conference.
Yeah, it's crazy, ain't it?
I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to go to Birmingham, Alabama, and I'm going to take my shirt off. And I'm going to whip Greg Sankey's ass. Go Tigers.
Just like him.
Oh, my God, dude. I didn't expect that. So, anyway, that took up a lot of our time. But good to see you, Deputy Cam, yeah. Cameron, Deputy Smitty Sports, whatever I call you. Really nice win for the Gamecocks over the weekend. 57-0. Just looking back through history. I can't find another 57 point opener. And I went, well, I mean, it's probably something back when they played like Welch Neck back in the 20s or something, they scored 80. But, you know, there was that 56 point game in 11 against ECU. And then there was a 56-17 win over Citadel in 85 that I could find. Other than that, you know, Carolina's rarely done this historically, and they pitched a shutout. 645 yards of total offense. I think it went about as well as it could. What does that mean moving forward? You know, a lot of teams played really well Saturday, especially teams on Carolina's schedule. But, you know, your general takeaways from the game, I just thought it was – you hear that phrase, Shane Beamer likes to use it, clean game. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a very clean game. And a lot of times openers are not. Not that there weren't some moments here and there early, but man, overall, clean game, and that's starters, reserves, walk-ons, whoever was playing.
Yeah, yeah, very clean. You know, I think it was three penalties, and then we didn't have a turnover. I don't believe, right? I know DJ Black put it on the ground one time, got it back. Fuller fumbled one time I think he thought the Sellers was going to pull it. This little quarterback running back exchange right there, but he fell back on top of it. And honestly, if he don't drop that ball, I was watching it last night on the all 22 from the end zone angle. If he don't drop that ball, he makes a cut, he might be out of there. Just overall encouraging, man. The offensive line, I thought, played really well. Like when you just watched them up front, I watched a lot of it last night, man. And it's just like, they were just hat on a hat. They were just just getting blocks. You didn't see a lot of free runners. I think the free runner that you saw on the first drive of the game, I think there was a mix-up up front. I don't know exactly without knowing the play and whatnot. It looked like it was on Carter Miller, but then again, I don't know for sure, so I don't want to pinpoint him on that and whatnot. But other than that, I mean, it was pretty clean. And like you said, we rotated a lot, and it's like there wasn't much of a drop-off on offense or defense. We rotate, and those guys just kept playing. So overall, it was very encouraging. I love what I saw from the offensive line. Sellers had some really good moments throwing the football. The running backs, we all know that. I mean, Tariq Holman, where'd that come from? That shocked me. I mean, but he got that first carry, and he was out of there. So another thing that I noticed too, man, those receivers, they were getting after on the perimeter blocking. They were making an emphasis, and they were getting after it. Now they missed some, you know, from time to time, but those guys were they were really getting after it and putting in a lot of effort to block. And that's how you get those long runs, man. You know, a 15-yard run could turn into a 50-yard run if your receivers block. And so. I'm assuming that's been emphasized a lot. Not that it hasn't been, but they were getting active out there.
There's one play. I was watching, Joe Griffin was a guy that breaks down film sometimes. I was catching the early play. It was over on sort of the east side. Lenore threw it to his right. And it just kind of shows you what, like, they say it's a game of inches. It actually is. So Mazio got a block in the guy's chest, right? It's a little one of those little screen passes out to Nick Harbor. But DJ Black, for some reason, was high, and he got and then the guy just caught Nick's ankle and took him down. Otherwise, that's a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, literally a touchdown, because nobody's going to catch Nick Harbor. No. Just kind of shows you how little things matter so much.
Yeah, it does. Like you said, that is a touchdown. I saw that. And mentioning little things, you know, like it was what was it, the second drive or whatnot, when we try to hit Mazio down the middle of the field and just a little bit underthrown. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and look at that from the sideline, from the all 22, it's got more of a clearer picture. I'm not so sure that Mazio didn't get too wide either. So when he's running vertical, there was a defender on the hash. He could have went inside, could have went outside. I'm assuming they teach it to go outside and then get back in. But he went outside. He kind of looped it a lot to get back in. So I don't know if it was like just a mistiming thing. Sellers thought he was going to be more inside on that. You know, it looks like an underthrown. It may have been underthrown. Mazio may have been. I don't know exactly, you know, how they're coaching that right there. But when I went back and looked, I thought maybe he got a little bit too wide right there and could have bended it in a little bit sooner, a little bit better on that play. And if you do, I mean, he might hit him in, you know, around the waist, around the chest, and he's out the gate as well. So, like I said, those little things matter a ton. And those little things, if you don't get them cleaned up, you know, throughout the season, then that's how those little things turn into a lot bigger things.
Yeah, because you miss an opportunity there. You can have the perfect play call on, and 10 people can do their job. One person doesn't, and it messes it up. Speaking of that, back to the offensive line, you know, one of the things, gosh, it kind of hit me. I mean, I've always known this, but whether it was Cole Kublik, somebody, I think it's probably Cole if we're talking offensive line. So Oregon plays at Penn State last year, and they're going in for the winning touchdown or whatever, and it's loud, and you can see them communicate, the offensive line communicating with one another, and then they blocked it perfectly and scored. And I started thinking, I was like, you don't have that at South Carolina at all. And I did notice Carter Miller a couple of times, Nolan Hay a couple of times, where they switch off and things like that. Because a lot of it's like basketball. Like, you're playing man-to-man defense. You got to switch off, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed the communication was there.
Yeah.
And it got better as the game went on, no matter who was in there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very encouraging, because I think I can live, Smitty, with a gigantic 340-pound SEC defensive tackle eating your interior up and can't block him and all these dudes in the SEC. I could live with that. That's going to happen, right?
Yep.
But what gets frustrating is when they don't know what to do. They're just like looking around, shrugging their shoulders, and it looked like that so much last year. So I thought, you know, your thoughts about the communication up front and how critical it is to have a group that's kind of in sync. I think that's what people mean by gelling on the offensive line.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you saw it. You saw it on the, you know, on tape or whatnot. Kent State, they run a lot of stunts, a lot of twists up front. And our guys were just passing it off to one another. They wouldn't, what I call, you know, chasing. Last year, you know, you'd see a guard or whatnot, and then the three tech would loop or something, and they go running after it. And so, you know, the end's looping back around and coming right to where you should be picking them up. And so I saw a lot of passing off from our guys Saturday, which was very, very encouraging to see. But yeah, it was, Kent State run a lot of double A gap mugs, you know, six man pressures, and our guys just picked it up. I mean, last year there's free runners coming through, you know, Sellers don't, you know, wouldn't have time in a lot of those instances. I mean, six man pressures, and it was like a four man pressure back there at times. You know, he had the time to get rid of the ball. I mean, the two sacks that we had, which I know one of them was wiped away. There was time to get rid of the ball. I mean, regardless if he didn't feel he could have got rid of it, or he didn't like what he saw, you know, didn't want to take an intentional ground, or didn't want to, you know, throw an interception, so he just kind of ate it. But I really, overall, man, that offensive line played well. Of course, you know, everybody was looking at Darius Gray. I mean, you see why he started. I mean, he was phenomenal out there. And then, I was impressed. Overall, I like that group. But Nolan Hay, I see why he won the job as well. No discredit to Hank or anybody, but Nolan Hay was just nasty in there. He played a really good game as well.
I thought so. You know, Hayes, he was 303 when he came in last year. He's 328 now. It's good weight, too. Like, you see pictures of him over the summer. He's getting fat. He gained 25 pounds somehow.
Yeah.
He can move his feet, and he's a physical guy. You know, they got Carter Miller is listed as from Tennessee, but he's really spent his first 3 years of high school in Dallas Metroplex. And then Nolan's a Houston kid. And in recruiting, offensive line is not something we do in the South great, just to be honest, like compared to other parts of the country. But there are good offensive linemen in Texas. Oh, so that's interesting. Got two Texas starters up front. You know, I thought the RPO game, and I'm assuming that's what it was. I don't know that it was all RPOs, but there's a reason folks wonder, well, why they keep throwing? Were they trying to run up the score? No, they're just running their offense. Cutter goes to the line, count the box, too. Okay, well, this is a throw. I mean, that's just how this offense is, and I expect that to continue. But I thought that after some early sort of was wondering about the decision-making, I thought Lenoris was really good, knowing when to pull and when to throw and all that. And I thought Cutter was good. And then Lucian Anderson did some good things too. But I think, you know, with that type of execution, if they can continue it, that gets pretty hard to stop, right, with the RPOs if you're executing it at a high level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you can execute it and be like a well-oiled machine on it, I mean, it's super tough. I mean, especially with like a Lenoris Sellers. I mean, not only the regular RPO with a quarterback that doesn't run as good, you know, that's still difficult as well. He's going to hand it. He's going to throw it out there. But then all of a sudden you factor in 16's legs and you're like, I mean, it's really, you know, you got a triple option here. Either he can run it, the running back gets it, or I'm going to throw it out there. And so he made a lot of good decisions on that. I was watching it last night again. You know, I went back and it wasn't like a 15-yard gain. Nick had caught a little hitch and broke a tackle and went up the field. But it was the right read. You know, he was going to hand it. All of a sudden, they collapse. He pulls it and throws it right out there. So just stuff like that, man. It's just encouraging to see. We haven't really saw a lot of that type of offense around here, you know, in a while. So just, you know, what they did wasn't very difficult, but man, they just did it well. And so I just loved how I saw everybody in sync, everybody playing together, everybody on the same page. You know, there wasn't a lot of times where the play clock was running down and we're scrambling around and having to burn a timeout and everybody's looking around the sideline. You know, I just liked how clean it was from, you know, the offensive line to the receivers to Lenoris. I mean, just everything. Like you said, we rotated a lot and it's like it felt like there wasn't like a drop off. I mean, we just kept going, which was awesome.
Matt Fuller, to me, you know, the difference from what I could see is just his feet seem to be moving faster. Like, I should call them piston legs. Like his legs seem to be churning a little quicker. He's always been a physical runner. He's now, I think, more of a, when he breaks into the secondary, he's more punishing to defensive backs. I think maybe last year he's just so shocked he was back in the second level that I can't believe I'm here. You know, that happens sometimes. I thought obviously Jabri Coleman had the big run and had two touchdowns and has a nice burst. But I thought too, Isaiah Augustov and Jawan Howell, who combined for 103 yards on 17 carries, I thought they looked good too. I mean, I think both of those guys, and I've always loved Jawan Howell, but Augustov had some nice runs in there. And there's, you mentioned no drop off. I mean, he mentioned Christian Clark because he was kind of the number two guy. And then by the time it was time for him to get lathered up, everybody was playing as it was. He had some nice runs. But, man, I think the depth at running back kind of showed on Saturday. And it wasn't just, oh, they're playing Kent and Kent's tired. I mean, these guys were making people miss. They were breaking tackles. Nice spin move, you know. In zone run game, you know, your back kind of has to read it sometimes. And I think they did a good job of that. There were some fundamental things, Deputy Smitty, that I just liked and I thought was an improvement over the backs last year. Your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have a legit running back room. And like I said, I honestly was kind of, I won't say overlooking, but, you know, Jabri Coleman, you know, he kind of, not really come out of nowhere to me, but he kind of come out of nowhere because I didn't expect to see him in there, you know, and do what he did, you know, first carry type thing. But when you see it and you see the flashes, you're like, man. And then all these guys, I mean, we got four backs, five backs, whatever that legit you can put in there and you feel comfortable with. At least I do right now. Now we'll see as the season goes on or whatnot, but all of them bring a little something different to the table. And so it's just, I don't know. It's very encouraging. And, but yeah, we ran a lot of that split zone, man. And, we was leaving that backside end unblocked and having a tight end come around and kick him out. And like you said about the running backs having to kind of read where to go, that's what it is. I mean, you're just kind of, once it gets blocked up, it's up to the running back. Well, you know, normally I'm going to hit it right here in the A gap or whatnot, but the B gap's open, you know. And you saw that a few times, Saturday to where they saw it and they either cut back or went, you know, popped out to the B or C gap instead of, you know, just lowering their head, running in the back of the A gap or whatnot. So I saw some good vision from those guys. But mentioning Fuller, as you said, man, like that first run that he popped out right there, you go back and look, I mean, it's a great hole, by the way. And then the Kent State guy come flying up and he just makes a miss. Like he don't even come close to getting a hand on him. And then he's out of there. And running downfield full speed where the two guys kind of collapse at him. He don't even slow down. He just hits him, boom, kind of got, you know, stumbled up. And if he gets his feet up underneath him a half a yard sooner, he's probably out of there, you know. So, all in all, a really good day for the offense. Couldn't ask for much more. If you asked for much more, it would have just been the first draft touchdown. But, just a really good day, really good day. And I also thought this was funny. And I almost made a video. I was like, I'm not going to stir that pot. But, you know, the video that went around with Clements in the drill, and everybody was like, oh, you know, wild on social media. If you go back and watch our guys on Saturday, you could see where the drill come in place at. You could see their footwork. Yeah. You know, they're just not running upfield. You know, you could see their footwork and how they're getting upfield to the second levels. It came from that drill right there. And I'm like, I mean, that's perfect, you know, but it all got bashed on Twitter or whatnot that day.
Some guy that doesn't even coach, he's a trainer, you know, for pro offensive linemen, which is a completely different world. And
yeah,
I guess he's mad. I don't know. They're both from Texas, so there's maybe some, I don't know, maybe the trainer, you know, who's an idiot, tells him to do something. The coach is like, no, do it this way.
Yeah.
But that was very interesting. Yeah, it was one of the best coached game one offense, best coached offensive lines game one I've seen at Carolina in a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's inevitably normally some screw up there, even if it's a good offensive line. And there just wasn't a lot to complain about, and they rotated guys. So we'll see. Defense real quick, and then we'll get you out of here because I know we were late. It's not every day somebody gets kicked out of the conference. You know?
Yeah. Especially lots of LSU, you know.
Good Lord. You make your bed, you lie in it, you know, nowadays. I mean, too much is too much. But anyway, so I read something, an interesting stat Wes Mitchell had on X, that 40% of South Carolina's tackles on defense Saturday was by the defensive line. It's second in the country next to A&M. A&M, I think Missouri State had 37 yards. By the way, it's Sparky Wood's son, Casey's the coach at Missouri State, so shout out to him. But they second to A&M. I guess it got lost on me that maybe it was that much. It didn't seem like it was that much. But, you know, one of the things I've heard with your commentary since the game is that they got them on the ground. Right? Mm-hmm. Not a lot of missed tackles. And that's something in an opening game that can get you too, you know.
Yes.
Your thoughts on the defense overall?
Yeah, no, we tackled really well, really well. I mean, we got hands on you. You were going down. I thought the defense flew around. I thought they played really well. Kent State was trying to get the ball out of their hand fairly quick for the most part as well, because I saw some people saying that, you know, wish that we could have got a little bit more pressure. You know, we all want more pressure, no matter, you know, regardless. But as I was telling somebody in the stands on Saturday too, I said, you know, six is going to make a big difference once he gets back as well. I mean, that's going to make a huge difference once he gets back. But I saw guys flying around. I saw them tackling. Not a lot of missed assignments that I could see so far. And just overall, very encouraging. I don't even try to announce his name because I'm going to butcher it. But the Illinois kid that come in, man, he was all over the field too. He played really well. Mm-hmm. And so, and then, of course, you know, everybody wanted to kind of watch Julian Walker. And, you know, he kind of forced that sack to Addison. He, you know, he beat his man, you know, right away, forced him up. And then Addison comes in and cleans it up. And I actually need to make a video on that on a different play. But Addison, man, I saw one time where Kent State was running like a split zone. And they left him unblocked, and they had that tight end coming around. And, man, you want to talk about a collision. I mean, the Kent State guy kind of held his own a little bit as well. Like, he didn't just knock him out, but a collision. And that's how you got to take on these blocks. You know, too often you see guys trying to duck inside, duck outside, you know, just kind of patty cake with it or whatnot. Not Addison. I mean, he went straight into him, stayed square with him, I mean, and popped him. That tight end, I promise you, the next time they called that, he's thinking, coach, don't run that to 40 side. I mean, he hit him. And so I was like, You know, it was one of those things you have to watch a few times. I loved it. So, yeah, overall, I thought the linebackers played well. They flew around. You saw 14 fly around. And so
14's good.
Yeah. You saw him fly around. Yep. It's just one of those players, man, that's when you're out there, they just keep appearing in your eyes somehow. That's the way I like to put it. You know what I mean? You might be watching somebody else, and all of a sudden you're like, man, who is this 14? You know? So, but yeah, overall, just a really good day, man. Really good day. Really, really hot day, but really good day. Saturday's going to be a little bit cooler for us.
Yeah, thankfully, man. Because it was. And look, the fans, I said this morning, the fans showed up. I mean, I know at some point, if you're in those aluminum bleachers and it, you've got anybody that isn't feeling well, I mean, it can be dangerous. So I don't blame anybody for going. And most people, I mean, you were there, but for what I was, so a lot of people just hit the shade. You know, they were in the stadium still. They were kind of back watching it.
Yeah.
Traditions Club and watching it on TV or something like that. So,
That's what I said. If you had some type of medical condition, I don't think I'd have been out here. And if you left after the first quarter, then I don't blame you. But there was a lot of people on the ramps. From what I was told, I mean, the one ramp I went up or whatnot, you could see them, but I mean, I was 45 minutes before kick, so that's kind of normal. But yeah, it was a good day, a good hot day. I don't know what I have kind of figured out from all the people, kind of get both sides. East and West getting in the game was good. Student section and Cockaboos Club had some issues. So
had some issues.
Hopefully that gets worked out this week or whatnot. But East and West side, apparently it wasn't much issue. So
I got there was an email from a gosh, it was Donati's weekly, the athletic director's weekly email. He sends it out, and it said they were working on it. You know, they'll fine tune it or something. I mean,
yeah,
obviously.
Trial and error this week or last week. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, well, this is all kind of new, you know.
It was bound to happen. And I'm sure the temperatures, somebody compared it to waiting in line at Disney. If you've ever been to that bad boy in July, I know exactly how that's goes down, man.
Yes.
So yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the escalator on the backside of the stadium wasn't working. I don't know if that's because, you know, it's just broke or if that was like maybe it got involved in some of the construction. I have no idea. But like my nephew, he set up in the 900 and he just took the elevator. It didn't take him no time. So that's why I was kind of confused on if you went to the 900, you were good. But like right below you in the Cockaboos Club, it took a little bit longer. So I don't know. But all in all, I thought that everything was pretty good, you know, considering how much construction we have around the stadium and whatnot. I thought it was all in all pretty good. I mean, I know some people have a little bit different opinion because they may have waited for 45 minutes or whatnot. But I mean, I went in at 12:05 or so. It took me 5 minutes to get through. Hopefully this week it's much better for the people that didn't have a great experience. But man, it was hot and it was packed. A lot of you know people were excited. It's just first game jitters for the people outside the game.
Yeah, exactly. But if, you know, a very good opener. You know, we'll see. I think the idea is to go build off that this weekend, play just as good or better, and then you know get ready for Mississippi State and you know just keep fine tuning. I thought everything operationally went well, and you just didn't see some of the mistakes that you saw. And sometimes those things get cleaned up, but sometimes they do linger the whole season, like you see at the beginning. So, all right, Deputy Smitty, man, we really appreciate it. Tell everybody again about Smitty Sports. I'm going through, like, I see you pop up on all the different business accounts I have. So every time I see it, I click follow. Tell everybody
what to see. I do appreciate it. Yeah, Smitty Sports Network. I will have some announcements on that probably this evening, if not tomorrow. But I'm on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Just trying to get all those pages off the ground right now. But other than that, I mean, you can find me at Deputy Smitty anywhere else.
Hey, and a tremendous win for the Bowling Springs Bulldogs last Friday night. Unlikely as it was. I caught the broadcast. They stream the Bowling Springs games on YouTube. And I'm like, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
What a game that was. So,
anyway, yeah.
A tremendous win. All right, my man. Thank you so much. We'll see you next Tuesday.
All right. We'll see you guys.
That's Deputy Smitty. He joins us every Tuesday right here on the show. Going to get in the chat box a little bit, Phil. See if they can kick LSU out of the SEC.
Yeah. Something tells me, like, you don't do what you did today unless something is going to happen. I mean, I might be wrong, and maybe it is just.
That's politics, though. You know how it always is. We're going to shut the government down.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man, don't forget about Gamecock Traditions. You're not going to kick them out of the SEC.
No. I
mean, GamecockTraditions.com gets you some new gear. You won't be sweating profusely through it, hopefully, as much this weekend. All right. So Matt's got some thoughts about the stadium. So we're gonna get his thoughts on the back. Because I have no dog in the fight. I was not there. I did not talk to anybody that had a bad experience. Except Jamie Bradford said getting into the – he didn't. He wasn't complaining. Just getting into where his seats were. There, it seems like there were certain entrances that were a little bit ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about all that. The McKellar Enterprises chat box is rocking and rolling. And we'll be back on the show.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show here. Talking about big win, 57 points to nothing. Yeah. Over the Kent State Golden Flashes to open the season, man. JC, it's talk about a far cry from the last MAC opponent you opened the season with in Akron, and that nail biter. not ODU. They're not a MAC opponent, but last
there's some group belt. Yeah, group of yeah, group six, six. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just looking at the MAC. I was trying to figure out what the point differential between the Big Ten and the SEC against MAC opponents, and I was just looking at Akron on the screen here.
You got that Western Michigan, Michigan,
and then of course the UMass over Rutgers.
I forgot UMass was even in the MAC.
I did too until I was looking at it. I was like, oh,
so the Big Ten should have taken two L's to the MAC this past weekend.
Yeah.
Shake my head, my.
Well, it's a good thing that Carolina beat their MAC opponent, because that'll look good in the eyes of the committee at the end of the year, because apparently that's what boosts your strength of schedule.
Those wins over the MAC. Shout out a great Kent State team that beat Western Michigan that almost beat Michigan. Give them a 4 seed.
That's right.
Oh, home game. Bye. Give them a bye.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that, now there you go. Reward them with a bye.
Chaco comes in. He said that Jabri Coleman run reminded me of that Rocket Sanders run against A&M. Yeah, same side. Max Drag. Let me just say this about him, because he's not going to get any credit.
No.
From anybody. From what I saw, and I'm not saying on the All-22 if you scored the film or I don't know what PFF said, but he showed up to me like whenever I'd look at it as a blocker, like a pulling blocker, number 80. That's why they recruited him. He's just a blocker. I mean, I think he's got like 6 career catches or something. Watch him throw him a two hit. Watch he'll catch 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's the next thing you know.
Kind of like my Clemson prediction, you know. Yeah. It's like, stop talking, JC. But I thought he really showed up well. I think Maurice Brown had some good blocks and bad blocks out there. The tight end, Brady Hunt had some pretty good blocks. Mike Tyler seems to be a guy they like to get the ball to. Scored a touchdown, first career touchdown, 3 receptions. I mentioned on Coffee today, too, like that little dump pass that came with Dowell Loggins that he got from Kendall Browse, Josh Simon, speaking of the A&M game, Chaco. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why they stopped running that last year. That was dumb. I don't know. But they're running it now. But what some of what they do, they'll motion Nick Harbor over there, throw it to him.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I was like, wow, I love that. So there's a lot to like, and I don't think, you know, as far as it looked imaginative, but it was really just their. I mean, I don't know that they did anything out of the ordinary.
I feel like there's still more to this offense. Yeah. Like, it wasn't intentionally withheld, but just game flow. And you're like, well, there's no need to run a couple of these plays that we got on the.
Yeah. I mean, and with the RPOs, it's a base play, but it looks like, now they're throwing, now they're running. You know, it looks a little more futuristic. Oh, Clint says, I'm glad we looked organized and competent offensively. Thank goodness. Yeah, none of those problems, dude. Golly. A relief. Krager said the right side of the line was really good. Yeah, Arnett and Poku both run blocking, especially. Mm-hmm. He's like, should Gray move to left guard and be beside Peak when he gets back? Surratt at right tackle, that would be strong as New York. I don't know what's going to happen there. Shed may be the, you know, Shed missed some practice time, a little banged up during the preseason. I'm pretty sure he's one of their 5 best offensive linemen, but, you know, when Pete comes back, what would he do? I don't know, because I don't think Nolan Hay is going to be supplanted.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Nolan Hay was really good, and he graded out, at least if you care about the PFF grades, better than everybody. I know the guy that made the sack on the one sack came from Hayes' side, but once you slow that down, that wasn't on Dolan.
No.
And he came out. He pulls really well. Yeah, they do a lot of pulling and stuff. Got a counters.
If he survived being the first one that false start was called on, which, of course, my mind is like, the one guy on this line that was playing last year. It's like, we're doing it again.
I'll be honest, first half of the first quarter, I kind of just looked down and shook my head. Because I'm like, please, it's like, surely this won't happen. And it didn't. Blake says he loves watching Seth Smith. Seth from the spring workout looks like the best tackle physically, but glad to see him be good on the field. And even back on the depth chart. Yeah. Yeah. Seth Smith's pretty good. I mean, the depth on the offensive line was a concern heading out of spring. And I think games like Saturday go a long way toward developing that, because you don't just have your five guys and then nobody else, they never play. Since something happens, some dude comes in cold and all of a sudden your quarterback's getting lit up. They don't have the communication. I thought Saturday served a purpose for the offensive line beyond just being competent, right?
Yeah.
Right. As far as the future goes. Bruin said, Beamer was so giddy after the win that he has an offense, he couldn't contain himself. Yeah, see, scheme matters. Okay, so let's talk about scheme mattering. You look at South Carolina, what they did, right? That's a pretty good deal. All right, so now look at Georgia Tech and that NFL offense, the George Godsey offense, career NFL assistant. Now, Georgia Tech, absolute legend and a great quarterback there, and nothing but respect for him. And I hope they turn it around. Man, that offense just looked like against a Big 12 defense that didn't worth two nickels.
No, I know. I'm like,
and the Georgia Tech, and Mendoza's not a bad quarterback for them. And it's just like, man, so. Cam mentions Peak may not take the left tackle position back from Gray. I think he maybe. I mean, look, before Peak was a left tackle last year at NC State, he was a right tackle. He's played right tackle before. So I don't know. Krager said you can move Shed inside. Yeah, Shed may go back inside, but what? I mean, you're not going to bench Poku unless you move Nolan Hay to center. Man, Carter Miller was just so good at communicating.
Yeah, there's not really any reason to mess with it right now. It's like you might just be the versatile guy who could come in for almost everybody if somebody gets hurt, God forbid. I mean, at least, Shed can play, three, four positions if somebody does ultimately get injured. So, yeah. And you need that guy.
Yeah, I don't know how they'll do it. This is an interesting situation.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting something to ponder. Gamecock Depression, what would be the absolute latest Peak and Stewart would have to start practicing to play versus Mississippi State? I'm not going to comment on that, number one, because there's an acclimation period. But then number two, if I say this and then there's no public confirmation about their practicing or not, which I doubt there will be because if there's gamesmanship or whatever, then I'm wrong and then people get confused and it's like, well, they didn't do it through the acclimation. You got other fans. I mean, I'm just going to leave that alone and say, maybe we'll find out something here in about 13 minutes about it. I don't know for sure, but,
this is going to be a questionable on both in the initial SEC injury report.
Yeah. Question. So, Matt says concourses were packed with people just sitting in the shade. Chaco said the defense swarmed to the ball. Yeah, how about that one time they tried Darylis Clark on the reverse? That didn't go well.
He ended up with negative receiving yards because of that loss. It was so bad.
Cam liked Gabriel Brownlow Dendy's fire and emotion. We said that was awesome. I agree because that's what they've had to try to get out of him. You know, that he needs to be like a different person out there because he's a super duper dude. I mean, he wants to be a preacher, really super guy, just kind of laid back. But the great ones turn it on and turn it off. And I think it lit a flame under him that he didn't start because they started a 3-man front. So they started Kelby Collins. And I think he went out there and was like, screw this, man.
Hold on, I'll show you.
The Cockaboose Club area, Ghost Flame says, is always slow to get in unless you go in an hour before. Gotcha. Krager said the game felt like his shop felt in the afternoon of the summertime, just brutal.
Yeah.
So Matt says the new water filling stations do not feature cold water. Bobby counters with room temperature water is better for the body. Tough enough. Just kidding.
Yeah.
He's like, it wasn't room temperature. It was like 90. Yeah, you don't want boiling water. Oh, gosh. So, everyone was going to the wrong gates, too, causing backups because they wouldn't let you in any, just any gates. They were turning people away to go to the correct gate. Oh, God.
Oh, see, now that I don't.
Just let them in, man.
Yeah, if it should be. I realize you can't get from one side to the other now because of construction, but that just means it needs to be divided in half. You don't need to subdivide. That's awful. That's awful. Because I typically, even when the only time I ever enter on the east is when I have east tickets. But if I have south or west tickets, yeah. I just enter in from anywhere. And it should be like that because that helps flow. And you can walk between those two still, I believe, unless you can't access the south from the west.
I don't know, man. I get to experience all this in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Dimitri told me how good Ole Miss Louisville would be. What a game. Yep. And Clemson, he said Clemson has a quarterback issue. This quarterback room may be worse than ours in 2020. Wow. Ooh. You think so? I was surprised Clemson didn't give him more of a fight.
Initially, it was kind of surprising.
Initially, but then as the game went on, you kind of were like, this kind of looks like Tommy Bowden era Clemson sort of some. I mean, I don't think LSU is that good. Honestly,
that's the other thing.
I don't think they're as good as they. No, I mean, you know. Now, do I think right now, based on what I saw out of the two teams, I think they wipe the floor with Ole Miss's behind when they go to Oxford. I hate to say that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because Ole Miss is going to be like revenge, and LSU is going to be like, we've owned you for centuries. don't worry about it, dog.
Naughty toddy,
you know. Chaco said, watching games this weekend, we look just as big and fast as our SEC counterparts. Yeah, I think so. Bigger and faster in some cases.
In certain respects, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt's ready for this week's temperature kickoff. So, Harrison says, Clayton White's defense hadn't given up a point against a group of six teams since that Akron game in 24. They've shut out the last two G6 teams they've played. So Coastal, wait a minute. Coastal got their seven a different way, right, Harrison? It wasn't.
Is that what we're talking about?
They shut it out. Right.
Okay.
Harrison wants to mention that Max Drag is a Chapin Eagle because he's a proud Chapin Eagle. Chapin's won two games now. Shout out to Corey Helms.
Yeah, Corey Helms, Anthony.
Head coach there. Head coach there. Chaco mentions LSU filing the amendment to kick him out of the conference. Yeah. The SEC filed an amendment to expel LSU from the conference. Yeah, they're going to vote on it, too. Mm-hmm. Matt says Mo missed at least one bad block. Yeah, you know, Sean Elliott called it when he said Mo kind of sometimes plays out of control on offense. Mm-hmm. That's what holds him back on offense. Everybody talks about him. And you don't notice it, too, because he's such a great dude and a fantastic football player. And he's out there making plays on special teams. He goes 90 miles an hour. But
yeah,
I think sometimes assignment-wise, that's probably why he's not as up on the depth chart as he should be. So Lance says there's a lot more to the option game, and they kept it simple in the pistol formations. Yeah, they had a couple of options dialed up, but, man, it was something. Matt says, think they were taking it easy on Brady Hunt's knees. He didn't get much action. At least two passes thrown to him, just the 2-point conversion. Now, I think sometimes that they don't use the tight end as much in this offense. They don't have to.
Yeah.
Jamie did the research. It's about 17% of the time.
You can tell if there are good receivers, then the tight end is just kind of like option three or four, depending on how many good receivers there are on these teams, which is perfectly fine. I mean, you know, because when you when there aren't that good, then you get Trey Knox having a great season.
Or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And Matt says Case and Henry gave up a big whiff. Yeah, I saw that.
No, they even called him out too. I was like,
Quantrell, Aiden Harris only played a few snaps. But holy cow, his get off on defensive tackle, him and Noah Clark. All I got to say is there's a reason why they call it D-line heaven, my man. Aiden, they're going to both going to be really, really good. Clint says Quasheed Scott flashed at nickel as well. Yeah, I like him. I think Gerald Kilgore didn't play bad, but I thought Scott was better. Craiger says Durajaye may be our TJ Sanders 2.0. Yeah, he's tough to block.
Tell me what, man, he looks good out there.
Mm-hmm. Clint says LSU may be an independent when they go to Oxford. So, Chaco says random. Did South Carolina recruit Yannick Smith back when he was killing it at Somerville? They did. They talked to him a little bit. Just ended up going to ECU. Good player though. I mean, I thought he was one they should have looked at a little bit more. But I mean, it's hard to argue that they needed more receivers. How about Lex Cyrus too? I didn't see that nine route layout type thing from him. I didn't. I mean, I've always kind of looked at him more as a slot speed guy, but. Mm-hmm. He just laid out and got it.
Yeah, I'm like, hey.
That's a good pass. Nice. Good pass. Pretty awesome, man.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I want to say this about Donovan Murph. Really impressed with him. And there's a reason why Donovan Murph, number one, was ready to come in and play last year as a young guy. Should have still been in high school. And number two, why everybody's so high on him. He's extremely confident as a player. He's extremely athletic, but also crafty as a route runner.
Mm-hmm.
And he has elite hands. And he has enough speed, explosiveness, and athleticism to make things happen. But when you talk about like receiver skill set, whereas you got like Nick Harbor, who's a guy that's an athlete that had to learn the position, Donovan Murph is a natural at that.
Yeah.
It didn't surprise me at all. And he's the type of guy, too, that's going to catch a slant over the middle. On a big play for a first down, line right back up and go burn you for a touchdown and then talk smack doing it. Right. I love that about him. That was great. That kid, you wait. That won't be the last you hear from him this year.
No.
Mm-mm. And I like it. You know, honestly, I liked his play a little better than DJ Black's Saturday.
Yeah, I think on Saturday for sure. I mean, that double move he pulled for the touchdown is like, my first thought is like, well, that's something you see on Sunday.
I agree. I mean, it was really good. And I think I don't know if it's Murph versus Black or what, but I would definitely maybe turn him up a little bit, turn Black down a little bit. And it's not that Black did anything wrong. I mean, I thought the fumble, you maybe don't need to fumble. He missed a block or two there, which is a no-no. But he redeemed himself pretty good, you know. I just didn't see necessarily – and maybe it's because it's kind of like he's starting. He's back at Carolina. He's had a great off season. I don't know about nerves, but maybe trying to do too much.
Yeah.
But I saw. I don't know. I'll just say I want. We'll see if we'll see more. Mm. Right. This is just a one game. Me. What the hell do I know? Looking at it. Right. But I have higher expectations based on what you heard out of practice for him. Mm. But Donovan, and then the other point of that is Donovan Murph's really, really good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not
there's a reason. He's there's no more learning. He's ready to go. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays for the rest of the year. Nitro Tuggle and Sequel Patterson, you didn't hear much from them, but man, Nitro did draw a PI, a big pass interference. And then the one play from Sequel was when they put him in after they took Mazio out because of the penalty or whatever.
Yeah.
And they just kind of threw it, and it was just kind of a weird play. You may hear Sequel Patterson a little bit more this weekend as far as, you know, his opportunities. Just didn't seem to have the opportunities. Sean Quantrell says, we got to start making a national claim to South Carolina as a state being wide receiver heaven, JC. There's always a lot of good receivers in this state. Mm-hmm. Always. Receiver hits, D-line hits. The other position, and defensive back, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm. The rest of them are up and down. But X-Man, I think the SEC move is – the SEC thing is a move in the right direction since the NCAA has no power anymore and won't exercise the power they do have. I think the league needs to take things in their own hands. I agree. Big Rooster, I wonder if anybody will ever break the record for most offensive yards in a game that Houston did in 89. 1,100 yards. We need to do it against Towson. I don't know, man. Those Houston teams back then.
Well, judging from last week's results, you know, it's either this week or, you know, the week at the end of the season. The last game of the season is going to be your best opportunity. Like, well,
score 50 again then. Rust Boy Swag says, I love the nickname Deep Freezer. Noah Clark looks gargantuan out there. Yeah, dude. And he's just getting started. And, man, he looked athletic for that size. Boy,
I was surprised. I mean, I knew from what we had all been told heading into it that, oh, he moves fast for a guy his size. I was like, dude, you can drop the modifier at that. Like, this guy moves fast. He is on, yeah, look like, you know, Fred Flintstone in a bowling alley out there. My man's got some sweet moves.
Yeah. All right, let's get out of here, man.
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Because we got to get the Beamer presser.
Yeah, I don't know why. Still, my voice is still weird, but.
Wide open Wednesday tomorrow, Phil. You gotta get ready.
Maybe it'll come back. I don't know.
Come back. All right. Thanks to Deputy Smitty for joining us. Wide open Wednesday is tomorrow. And it's also like Media Wednesday. David Cloninger, morning show. Chris Clark from Gamecock Central is in. Perry Orth on Thursday. Another preview show on Friday. Coffee all week. Back in the swing of things after our Labor Day hiatus. We love to take around here. All right, folks. This has been Inside the Gamecocks Show. Go listen to your head coach talk, and we'll see you tomorrow.